Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd, 1998. In the fireside room this afternoon is Julie Anderson. It's session number 98-1 and is titled Preparing for Jubilee Day. Let's listen in.
My name is Julie Anderson, and I'm the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Coordinating Council on Nicaragua, which is located in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been there for 4 years, August 1st this year, 4 years exactly. And WCCN was founded in 1984, building on historical sister state relationship between Nicaragua and Wisconsin, which started in the 1960s with the Partners of the Americas program, the Alliance for Progress. And so in 1984, the Contra War against Nicaragua was in full swing. And people of Wisconsin, or some people in Wisconsin, decided that they wanted to form a more constructive way for the people of Wisconsin to relate to the people of Nicaragua. And so WCCN was formed. And it's based on the idea of citizen diplomacy, that people relate more effectively to each other than governments do. So all of our work throughout our 14-year history has reflected that philosophy, although the types of work that we do has changed throughout that time. I'm very pleased to be here for this Jubilee celebration for Holden, and WCCN is very pleased to be receiving the donations from this Jubilee celebration. And I think that our alternative credit fund fits in very well with idea of Jubilee, in that one of the principles of Jubilee is freedom from debt. And although people might say, oh, microcredit, you're putting people into debt, microcredit is a type of credit, a type of debt that allows people to have control over that debt on their own and pay it off. And so it enables them to improve their lives and move up. And then also the idea of redistribution of wealth, where a loan fund like this allows you to take investments from people who have more and lend it to people who have less. We talk about people who have more in lending. We're not talking about Bill Gates or the Vanderbilts. We're talking about people like Sparky here who have been invested in this loan fund. And so it's a redistribution of wealth, a sharing of what we have here with people who do not have access to the resources that we do. We're going to show you a video here in a little bit. It's about 20 minutes long. It has, it's dubbed over. Some of the speaking is in Spanish, but it's dubbed over in English, except for at the very beginning, there's some subtitles. And then also up here on the whiteboard, I've put some different terms that I'll be talking about before we see the video, and that might be mentioned in the video as well. Well, Nicaragua, first of all, it's a population of 4.5 million. And also then on the whiteboard, this lovely map I've drawn, I forgot to bring one, but several people have asked me, where is Nicaragua? And just to kind of put it in a general context, we have the United States, Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and then Nicaragua. Nicaragua's between Honduras on the north, Honduras and El Salvador on the north, and Costa Rica on the south. And then some of the terms there, the IMF is the International Monetary Fund. SAPs are structural adjustment programs. WCCN is not a radio station. It is the Wisconsin Coordinating Council of Nicaragua. CEPAD, who is our first partner in our lending program, is the Nicaraguan Council of Protestant Churches, which is not only a council of churches, but it's also a relief and development organization. The NICA Fund is our new lending program that was just officially opened on June 1st, the Nicaraguan Credit Alternatives Fund, which is supplanting our old lending program, the Nicaraguan Nicaraguan Community Development Loan Fund, NCDLF. And this video is about the NCDLF, but the way that these two funds operate is very similar. And I'll explain the difference in a session tomorrow, but I think what's important today is to look at what is the need for credit in Nicaragua, and then how does microcredit operate in general there, and what are some of the benefits that have come from that, which will come from the video. So I'll talk a little bit, we'll see the video, and then I'd like to answer any questions that you might have. So if you heard the announcement at lunch today, you heard that Nicaragua is the second poorest country in the hemisphere, in the Western Hemisphere, second after Haiti. This year, or last, 1997, it's gross domestic product was up somewhat, so maybe it'll be going up to third place there. But after point one, doesn't really matter if it's second place, third place, fourth place. It's one of the very poorest countries in our hemisphere. How poor is it? Well, it has about approximately 80% poverty level, so that 80% of the population lives at or below the poverty line as determined by the United Nations Development Fund. And 80% of those people live in extreme poverty. 60 to 90% of the population is under or unemployed. On the Atlantic coast of Nicaragua, which is quite different from the Pacific coast where most people live, the unemployment rate is 90%. And then on the Pacific coast area, which is two-thirds of the country, it is closer to 60%. The average annual income in Nicaragua is approximately $468. While the annual market basket, which is the amount that it takes to feed and basically clothe the basic necessities for family six, is $1,650. So there's somewhat of a gap there. Even if we look at some of the professionals, police officers, teachers, doctors even, earn $100 or less a month. So even if they're working full time, they still can't meet the basic needs of their family. So you take somebody who's at, you know, family earning the average annual income, you have two of those breadwinners, and the family, you're still not meeting your basic needs. So that's how poor Nicaragua is. And so we're talking about Jubilee and freedom from debt. Debt is a very big issue in Nicaragua. Whether or not an individual has a debt of their own, Nicaragua, till like a year ago or a year or two ago, had the highest per capita debt in the world, $12 billion. $11 to $12 billion of debt for the country. And so that's a tremendous burden on the country because the debt service payments far exceed whatever Nicaragua can spend on their own country. Approximately 80% of any money that came into the country as donations or aid went back to service the debt. When we talk about service the debt, we mean paying the interest payments, not bringing down the debt itself. Through different negotiations, they have been able to lower the debt to between $6 and $7 million right now. So that's a great reduction, but still, the debt service payments are more than what the country spends on its population. Why does Nicaragua have to worry about paying its debt like that? The International Monetary Fund is an organization that lends money to countries around the world. And for Nicaragua to be able to continue functioning as a country, it needs to have some sort of credit coming in, even though it has a huge debt already. But in order for it to receive any credit from the IMF or from any country, it has to follow through with what's called a structural adjustment program. And the structural adjustment program in the SAP that's been applied to Nicaragua is one of the most stringent in the world. Many countries will negotiate their terms in Nicaragua in the early 1990s and then again sign a new agreement this year. Didn't do a very good job of negotiating, they just accepted the terms that were given, determined by the IMF. These structural adjustment programs plans are to, the idea is to adjust the economy of Nicaragua so it fits into the global market economy that's the global market runs on, and to be able to enable Nicaragua to pay its debt. What does that mean in real terms then for Nicaragua? It means they have to increase their exports. So instead of concentrating on producing basic grains to feed their population, they're producing export goods. Coffee, bananas, cotton, things that the local community, local people might consume, but the most of it is directed towards outside. Decrease in social spending. There has been an incredible decrease in the amount of money spent on education. And I don't know the exact numbers, but in the 1980s, the Sandinistas had education brigades, literacy brigades, that went out and reversed the illiteracy rate, which was up. The illiteracy rate was over 50% at that time, and reduced it to around 8% in just a couple of months of a campaign. It was recognized by the United Nations. Now that illiteracy rate is back up around 40% is what I heard at one point, because they're privatizing the schools. They're calling them autonomous schools. And so what happens then is they say, okay, your school then will now be an autonomous school, so the parents in your school get to pay for supporting that school. And your school will keep a public school for right now anyway, but still, they have classrooms of 60 students in the classroom. You see kids walking down the street with desks on their head or chairs on their head because there are not enough in the classrooms. And even if it's a public school, they have to provide, you know, their own books and paper and pencil if there is any. So it's an almost an impossible situation for kids to learn in the public schools. There's also a decrease in health spending, and so the hospital's in disrepair, and there's not access to medications. So that's an indication of the decrease in social spending. Also, privatization of state-owned businesses. Telcor, the telephone company in Nicaragua, is one example of that. It's being privatized. I'm not sure if it actually has gone through to this point right now. But it was a profitable state enterprise that could have provided some income for the government to perhaps cover some of those social needs. But it's going to be sold off soon. Another condition of the structural adjustment programs is to lower barriers to import. So that might not seem like such a bad idea, but when a country cannot protect its industries, it means that its people aren't guaranteed to work there. For instance, in Mexico, there's a brand of bread called Bimbo, and Nicaragua lowered its barriers to importing bread. So Bimbo comes in, underprices all the local bakeries, and even though they might be selling below cost, they capture the market for Bimbo, wipe out the other bakeries, and now Bimbo from Mexico has a stranglehold, basically, on the bread market in Nicaragua. And that's happened across different industries. So people they're no longer working in the bakery, they're no longer working in the shoe factory, and they're no longer working in the soft drink company because importing Coke into that country. So reduces the number of jobs available for the people there. Another aspect of the structural adjustment program is a reduction of credit available to small-scale producers. It was from 1992 to 93, there was a reduction of 66% in the amount of credit available to small producers. That was primarily provided through Banades, which is the National Development Bank of Nicaragua, and that bank, as of this year, has now ceased to exist. It was not maybe doing a great job providing credit to the small producers, but it was one of the only sources at the time, especially in the early 90s, that was providing credit to small producers. And so if small-scale farmers do not have access to credit to buy seeds, to buy other inputs, then they're not going to be able to produce. They're going to be bought out by the larger producers, which are producing for export, and so the food supply goes down in the country. So those are just some of the conditions that Nicaragua is facing right now. So what are some of the possibilities then for small-scale producers, whether they're farmers or small cottage industries? Where can they access credit? How can they get ahead? Since 1992, approximately, there's been a real burgeoning or blossoming of the microcredit industry or alternative credit industry in Nicaragua. And it offers, there's a variety of organizations sponsored by CEPAD, the Nicaraguan Council of Protestant Churches, Catholic Relief Services, Mennonites, Acción International, which is based here, the United States has a program there. So a whole variety of programs that are providing now credit. Most of that money is from limited sources of donated money, and then they lend it out. And who are they lending to? They're lending to a whole variety of types of borrowers. Women have a very hard time getting access to credit in Nicaragua. because they don't own property in their own names, because they've been marginalized from the business system. But yet they're very good business people, because they are juggling, they're oftentimes single mothers, they're juggling their home responsibilities and yet having to provide food for their kids, and they're doing whatever they can. Credit allows them to perhaps expand a business, put a small store in their home, sell tortillas on the streets. Well, that's what a lot of them do if they don't have credit, but it might allow them to hire somebody else to help sell their tortillas. A bottle washing company was started by a couple of women. Kids, they couldn't send their kids to school. Now they're hiring people. They're sending their kids to school and they're hiring people from their business. So there's women, there are village banks which allow people in a community where there is no bank to borrow a sum of money together. They have their own board of directors, and then they decide who gets credit in their community through an agreed upon set of policies. There are agricultural cooperatives and other types of collectives, and so I'm not going to talk anymore about who gets it, because this video does an excellent job of giving different examples of who gets credit. So we'll show the video now, and if you have any questions, then we'll talk about that afterwards. You grab the black cap off of that.
Nosotros nos sentimos trabajando con la ley de los hermanos porque en Nicaragua hay una crisis muy grande donde el empleo es muy escaso.
Pesanín nos ha apoyado muchísimo. Se ayuda más que estar otorgando donaciones a los productores.
Yo creo que ustedes son los que habilitan más de poquito, con los poquitos que ellos nos están prestando.
Solamente confío en nosotros, confío en nuestro trabajo y nos apoyó. Y eso fue muy importante y lo valoramos en los demás.
The Wisconsin Coordinating Council of Nicaragua, or WCCN, was founded in 1984. WCCN is the North American partner of the Nicaraguan Community Development Loan Fund. Our primary role is to solicit investments and donations and channel that directly to CEPAD, our partner in Nicaragua, and they then lend it out to the borrowers.
The people that we lend to are usually people that are not subjects of credit in the regular banking system. They have been refused many times by many different banks. They come to us knowing that they're going to get a no at the bank.
Well, during the 1980s, worker-owned and cooperatively owned enterprises did receive credit and financial support. That support and credit has evaporated because of changes in government policy over the last 5 to 6 years.
The banks, instead of lending to small and medium-sized producers, are now lending to very large producers in very speculative areas, or to imports, or to the commercial sectors in urban areas. Banks are refusing these people not because they don't have viable businesses. They're refusing them because they're from a certain class or they're organized in certain ways. For example, cooperatives, automatically the banks shut the doors to cooperatives. In contrast, we are trying to lend longer term loans to poor people who have their businesses, their farms, and their cooperatives. And in this context, where 60% of the people are unemployed or underemployed, employment is the key, and that's what we're trying to do with this loan fund.
I have many professions. I am a plumber, a mason, and a carpenter. But because work is very scarce these days, I work with my wife. With the help she gets from CEPAD, we have been able to make ends meet, to keep fighting to be able to do that.
In situations where we're lending to poor people where none of them have guarantees, then we use a methodology of solidarity groups, where you have five members of a group, and each of them are co-guarantors for the other, and they all borrowed together and they all pay back together.
Our solidarity group is composed of four women. He borrowed $200 at first, and then they lent us $500. We're on our third loan now, which we got in December, for $500. We've had no difficulties at all because we coordinate well with each other to stay in good standing. You have to be careful who you get involved with, because if I pay and my friend does not, I have to cover her and pay her share so the group doesn't fall behind. The benefit of solidarity groups is that they allow women to get credit in a country where women seldom have legal ownership of anything. They form these solidarity groups because they know each other and are willing to back each other up.
Well, it was one of the things that was appealing about the Saipan Loan Fund when we heard that they were focusing definitely on women. There's follow-through and there's training so that the women will be able to handle the funds that they have wisely. And then having lived here for 9 years, we have knowledge of people, we have trust in Saipan and those who are running the fund, and all those things are necessary for something to fly.
We are very clear with people that come to us to borrow money about our source of funds. We tell them where the money comes from and that the people who lend to us are in solidarity with Nicaragua. And I think that this is the reason that the borrowers are so appreciative about the loans and so responsible in paying the money back to the loan fund.
We were able to recommend, actually, the young man who went through university and got his degree in computer science.
And so he decided, and with some other students who had the same conviction, set up a school and began to offer training in computer skills to people who were not able to pay to go to other schools. He saw a number of young prostitutes working along the street, and he wondered whether they would really like to do something else. And he stopped and asked a couple of them.
I used to pass the Masaya Highway on my way home, and I always saw women doing this activity. One day, when I had time, I stopped, and a young woman came over to me. She was very flirty, very bold. And she said, "Okay, honey, so where are we going?" I got really nervous, and I said, "The truth is, I just want to talk to you." "Time is money," she said. I told her, "It doesn't matter. Get in the car, and we'll stay here talking." "Look, Celeste," that was her work name. "I am the director of a school," I said, "where we work with computers, and we help young women and students by teaching them how to use computers. If you would like, you can come study at the school and maybe find a good job so you can stop staying up all night endangering your life." When I told her this, her personality changed. Instead of being flirty, she became very shy and timid. "Oh," she said, "I really would like to study." "Here," I told her, "take our address." As I was leaving, I asked her, "How much do I owe you?" "Nothing," she said. "Thank you for stopping. I'll come to the school." "Come tomorrow. We'll wait for you," I told her. That's how our group of 14 women began. Of the 14, 13 stayed in school, and 5 of the 13 are out of prostitution altogether. 2 of them have really prestigious jobs. I think that the loan fund has been fundamental in helping us become the school we are today.
The Saipan Fund is also unique in that it has offered credit to sectors of the economy which traditional financial institutions and government-supported financial institutions have virtually ignored over the past 5 years.
This cooperative was founded 30 years ago and has been in the hands of the workers for the last 15 years.
At the triumph of the revolution, this business was in ashes. The owner that was here left, and the business was left deeply in debt to the bank. The workers at that time worked without salary, only for food, really. And in this way, they were able to pay off the debt to the bank with the idea of becoming owners of the business. But we haven't been able to carry this out. The government hasn't given us the legal papers we need.
The banks also created obstacles for us, telling us we have to submit detailed economic reports and business plans and pay very high interest rates. The bottom line is that banks do not help businesses like ours, popular associations. We get there and the doors close. They just tell us we don't make those kinds of loans. When we approached the loan fund, we were totally paralyzed. We didn't have capital to work with. We had equipment, but no raw materials. We got a $30,000 loan, and that gave us new life. With this money, we were able to get raw materials and begin operations again. With the small profit we made, we were able to pay off some debt and continue producing. In Nicaragua, it is a privilege to have a job. And to have a productive enterprise is something that all of us are very proud of.
The politicians in Nicaragua talk a lot about rural development, about getting funds out to the farmers who are producing the food for people in the cities, but very little has happened. Many of the businesses that we have helped, we have seen go from almost ready to go under to growing and hiring new people.
The Jalapa Association of Agricultural Cooperatives was created to support and tend to the needs of women's and men's groups, especially cooperatives. But there was a particular need to focus on women, because in this region, women have not gotten any attention in health, with loans, nothing. They don't always have the property titles or other guarantees they need to get loans. One of our groups, women from the local market, have a good credit history with the loan fund. They did have deeds to their houses, which they used as guarantees for a loan. Our first loan was for $5,000 and was distributed among the six of us. We got another loan in the same amount, which was also for all of us. Our last loan was for $10,000. We are really satisfied with this experience, and we hope to get more support in the future.
Banks here, be it government banks or private banks, are lending very short-term loans and are not lending to agriculture or to animal raising, which is what is needed.
There are always certain problems in agriculture. Here, there's no fixed price. Everything fluctuates. When we have small harvests, people pay a lot for our produce. When we have a lot to sell, no one buys because they say there's too much. We have been abandoned. Abandoned because the banks cut the loans off. But I think those who do help are you people. The loan fund lets people help themselves. It allows us to continue planting our beans and corn. What's left over after we sell allows us to keep food on our tables.
You've got to have a policy for people to be assured that they have that capital to work the land, to hire other workers, to develop their business or their farm. And that does not exist right now, other than non-conventional groups like NCDLF.
Prodecoop is a campesino business. Besides helping coffee cooperatives sell their coffee, we also help them with business development, technical training, and loans. we try to sell a good product. The high quality of our coffee has allowed us to survive in this market. The first years of exporting coffee were years of sacrifice for the small producers. Why? Because the only capital they had was work. The capacity to work. The desire to work. The intention to work. The producers deposited their coffee at the processing center with the expectation of getting paid only after the coffee got to its final destination. In this sense, the loan fund helped a lot. It allowed us to advance at least some of the money to the coffee producers.
We have 69 members in our cooperative who grow mostly coffee. One of the difficulties for an agricultural cooperative is that we need money at a particular time in the growing cycle. Another is that banks ask us for very sophisticated documents that we don't always have ready in the moment when we need the loans. Our relationship to Prodecoa is that we put our production up as a guarantee for loans. That's all they require of us, and we do it. Also, because they get financing from other organizations, they can give us the loans we need when we need them.
We initiated contact with some organizations involved in what's known as fair trade. They pay us a good price, a fair price for our coffee, and this has allowed us to address economic problems in our communities that the government doesn't address. The government takes no responsibility, and these issues become problems for families. For example, generally, and in the majority of our cooperatives, there is an education fund. There is also an internal loan fund for members of the cooperatives, which responds immediately to co-op needs. There is also a social fund that helps with health problems or other emergencies, like when someone dies. And this is not just for members of the cooperative. For example, the social fund benefits any sick person in the community. There are 2,650 small producers, women and men, in Prodecoa. 860 of them are women. Even though we have 2,650 small producers, this project benefits about 11,500 people. When the idea to work with these cooperatives first began, the truth is that we started with the idea of helping only those producers who had supported the revolution. But after 2 years, many producers who were contras were laying down their arms. They were poor and asked us to help them. To be honest with you, there was a lot of resistance to this, because there was a lot of bloodshed between us. It was a really difficult process, but we were able to do it. We were able to do it, and today, many of our co-ops are integrated with former members of the resistance. The truth is, we can't live with resentment or reliving the suffering of many years. Today, all of us can reach out with a hug and a handshake.
The Nicaraguan Community Development Loan Fund focuses more on what one can do positively with their money. CEPAD's credit is critical in enabling these enterprises to modernize and compete in the increasingly open Nicaraguan economy. In turn, these enterprises have been sources of support and empowerment to the communities in which they exist.
Citizen diplomacy diplomacy, or people-to-people relations, are the basis of all of our work. It's based on the idea that people can relate more effectively to each other than governments can. And the Nicaraguan Community Development Loan Fund continues to be a part of that work.
I hope that video did a pretty good job of introducing how the loan fund works, and our new loan fund works very similarly to the NCDLF. Instead of just lending to St. Pod, we will be lending to a number of different borrowing agencies in Nicaragua. The same type of people will benefit from the loans. But I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, or I'd like to hear from some of you if you have experiences in Nicaragua, or other ideas that you'd like to relate about microcredit, alternative credit.
What's the politics in Nicaragua today? I've been pretty much away from keeping up with what's going on.
Well, in 1990 there were elections that the Sandinistas were in power, and there were elections and they were voted out of power, and they stepped down, and Violeta Chamorro was the president at that time, from 1990 through 1996. In 1996, they had elections again in the fall, October, and I should say, too, that in the 1990 elections, the U.S. government very strongly backed Violeta Chamorro. A lot of money went behind her to help her win that election. And then in 1996, again, the U.S. government backed the winning candidate. His name is Arnoldo Alemán, and he's from the Liberal Party, which is the same party as the Somoza dictator before he was overthrown in 1979. That same party, and so a lot of his policies are very similar to his party predecessor, Somoza. There have been a lot of rollbacks of the gains of the revolution in the 1980s. The Sandinistas made a lot of progress in the area of education and health and redistribution of land. And since 1990, many of those have been rolled back. The U.S. government continues to play a role in that. The Helms-Gonzalez bill was passed in 1992 or 93, I forgot now the date. And that says that it was directed at Nicaragua, but it applies to any country. It says that in any country where a U.S. citizen has had his or her land or property confiscated, that country is not able to receive aid until the citizens have been compensated for that confiscation. The tricky part about that is that the person does not have to have been a U.S. citizen at the time of confiscation. So in Nicaragua, this is a very complicated matter because many Nicaraguans who had their land confiscated or their property confiscated came to the United States in the 1980s or last year or yesterday and will become U.S. citizens perhaps over a period of time. And then they go back to the country and say, okay, I'm your citizen. I had my land confiscated in 1980, 1979. You need to compensate me for this. And so every year, Bill Clinton has signed a waiver for that. It usually comes up in July. It has not come up as of last Friday. It had not come up yet for him to sign. He just signs a waiver, and it's anticipated that he'll sign that waiver again this year. So that Nicaragua can receive U.S. aid, even though all of the property issues have not been settled. So that's the general government. Alemán is president, and his vice president is further to the right, more reactionary than he is. The National Assembly, the largest party in the National Assembly is the Sandinista Party. But then there's also a block of votes that are on the Liberal Party side of the president. And So if you want, if you have some other specific questions about what's going on.
No, just in general.
How much capital do you have to work with? How many loans have been made?
Okay. We have WCCN. I'll explain a little bit more. I'm going to do this tomorrow too in a session, but I'll be happy to explain how it works. People lend to us. We have people from across the country. We have over 30 states, people from over 30 states, and a couple of people from Canada that lend to us in amounts of $2,000 on up. Recently lowered it from $3,000 to $2,000. For a period of 2 to 5 years, and earn 0 to 6% depending on the amount of the loan. And so right now we have $2 million in the NCDLF with SafePod. No more new money will go into that loan, to that fund, the NCDLF anymore, because all new investments that we receive will go through the NECA fund, which we have $300,000 in right now. And we project to make our first loans from the NECA fund in October, maybe November of this year. We have made, the NCDLF was arranged and so that every loan that we received went directly to SIPOD. It wasn't really, it really didn't stop on the way. It just landed in Madison and we put it in the bank and then it was SIPOD's because they had access to that bank as well. And so that loan, that was just one continuous loan. Every loan that we received was a loan to SIPOD. And they then in turn have made over 900 loans with that money. They have a capitalization of probably about $3 million right now, $3 to $3.5 million, because they have over $1 million in their own capital equity money. And current borrowers are around 350 that they have right now, spread across the country, ranging from $100 approximately to a borrower up to, right now there's no loans this big, but our largest borrower was this Protocol Coffee Cooperative that we saw here for $500,000 from WCCN to that coffee marketing cooperative, and then all in between as well.
How, over what period of time do people pay back their loans? Like, do they have to pay a loan back before they get a new one?
Generally, yes, that's how okay. It works in Nicaragua. And what WCCN has done is say, okay, we're letting our borrowing agencies, who then lend on, make their policies. But we like to see their policies to determine that, you know, they're not trying to pull a fast one on people, that they're charging fair interest rates, they're also handling their credit well. Because a well-run credit program is much more fair to the end borrowers than one that says, okay, well, we'll lend you today, and well, maybe we'll try to get it back, but we're not going to be too strict about that. Because that does not allow the fund to be regenerating of itself.
Do you know what a ballpark is for over, like how long would it take them to?
It depends on the loan, on the type of loan, what it's for, the size of it. For like the women in the market you saw, generally those loans might be around 3 months, a 3 month loan.
Okay.
For the coffee cooperative loans that we saw, those are 9 months to 12 months loans.
Okay.
There are some loans which are, most times, because they're such risky loans, most loans are under 18 months.
Okay.
What has been your repayment experience?
For WCCN, we have paid back all of our investors on time and in full. Interest payments we pay yearly to the investors, and then the principal at maturity. And SafePod has never missed a payment to us. As far as their borrowers, that varies some. And so SafePod right now is looking at a default rate of around 10%. And the other borrowing agencies that we're looking to lend to with this new fund are, a lot of them are looking a little lower than that, perhaps 5 to 10%.
An owner of a small co-op or not owner, but a small co-op wanting to take out a loan, what kind of interest rates do they expect to have to pay?
Interest rates in Nicaragua are very high. Bank charges anywhere right now from 20 to 24%. if you can get a loan. And so the access to the loans is the important part. CEPAD, depending again on what the activity is that they're lending for, will charge anywhere from about 12 to 24% and sometimes up to 36%. Now, the lower interest rates are more of a problem than the higher interest rates, though, because low interest rates will attract people who can get credit at other places. Who can go to a bank. But if I'm a business person and I could go to a bank and pay 24%, but I could go to, say, CEPAD and pay 18%, I'm going to try to present myself as, well, I fit into your criteria. So a higher interest rate, although it's more expensive for the borrower, ends up giving them more access to that credit. It screens out those people.
You're helping people that don't have other alternatives.
Right, exactly. That's the whole point of it, yeah. And microcredit is a very high cost type of undertaking, because a lot of these people don't have a lot of experience in the business world, or they might need training, might need a lot of follow up. They're small loans. Banks don't like to make small loans. They would much prefer, instead of making even a $500 loan, they'd rather make a $50,000 loan to this person over here than a $500 loan to you, because it's a lot more work to follow up on you if you're not paying your loan. So, you know, the follow-up, the number of people that it takes, it costs a lot, and so therefore the borrower will pay part of that cost or all of that cost through the interest rates that they pay. So a lot of our investors, particularly when we started, were quite concerned. Are you charging those borrowers too much? Do you know, you're only paying us 3%, but you're charging the end borrowers having to pay 24%. You know, what's happening to all that money in between? So that's very, you know, it's split up. Their operational costs in Nicaragua, and then WCCN has operational costs too. I do want to point out that you're looking at 1/3 of the staff right here. So we're a very small operation. I work full-time. We have another full-time person who doesn't work on the loan fund at all. She works on our other project and development and fundraising for us. We have a half-time person who works on the loan fund. And then in Nicaragua, we have a person who works about three-quarter time for us right now, a Nicaraguan man who actually studied at UW-Madison. We still have a few more minutes left if people have more questions. I'm just assuming that the video did such a good job of explaining it that I don't have any questions.
What are the politics of CEPAD? My sense is that most Protestant denominations in Central America in particular are much more brightest or evangelical in their nature than, typically a Presbyterian in Nicaragua would not be the same as a Presbyterian in the U.S. Mm-hmm. or a Lutheran, etc. Is CEPAD sort of in that kind of more of a right Christian mode, or?
No, CEPAD has actually been very much a political spectrum on the left and was very supportive of the FSLN, of the Sandinistas, when they're in power, and still is to this day. And they started out in 1972. CEPAD was formed in 1972 after the earthquake that devastated Managua. 10,000 people died in that earthquake. And so Protestant churches got together and said, okay, we have to provide relief to these people. Provided relief and then started doing development as well. Very progressive voice in the 1970s under the Somoza dictatorship, and then became even much more vocal in the 1980s. In the 1990s, they've continued their progressive and left stand, although right now they are a little bit, they've had some internal struggles because of people more coming from that more conservative evangelical view of let's look at religion only and not, let's not look at development. Let's look at it at a very limited way. And so they've had some struggles around that. But CEPAD has a history of being on the forefront, negotiating with the government in the 1990s of, we've got to protect the people of Nicaragua. And so they have a great reputation in Nicaragua. I don't know if any of you recognize the people who were talking about the man in the wheelchair who received the loan, Ken and Rhoda Mahler. They are Lutheran missionaries in Nicaragua, and as well as being investors. And so they've been in Nicaragua for quite a while. I've been involved with the loan fund for about 4 or 5 years.
The loan officer who was talking to in English seemed to have a southern accent. Was he American?
Right, yeah. Carter Garber, he's the founder, one of the founders of the loan fund. He was a Methodist missionary at the time in Nicaragua, and he had some experience with community development loan funds in the U.S., and so he approached CEPAD, and that's how the loan fund was formed then. It was formed first in Nicaragua with CEPAD in 1991, and then they approached several different organizations and approached WCCN after being rejected by a couple of organizations, and no, we don't want to do this. They approached WCCN in 1992, and WCCN agreed to be the North American partner and to take on that. But, and he is no longer living in Nicaragua. He's now just finished his PhD in economics and looking at microcredit in Nicaragua. And so I don't think he's going back to Nicaragua, though he continues to go back and forth. Also, Michael Troutman, who was quoted, we saw him on the video, he is also a Lutheran missionary. He was there for just 2 years. So a couple of Lutheran connections there. Although, the Methodist and Presbyterian churches have been very supportive of the loan fund. WCCN is a secular organization, but the solidarity movement in the churches through the 1980s continues to a certain extent, and the churches have been a good part of that.
The term microcredit, does it mean just small loans?
Yeah, right. Microcredit means small loans, and so not all of our loans fit into that category. It means loans $500 and under, generally, is what it means. But so that's why we talk about our loan fund more as alternative credit, because it does lend larger amounts to the worker-owned factories that we saw here, to the cooperatives, so that they can have a stronger impact in the local economy where they operate. Proto-Co-op, if you caught that, they have about 2,000 farmers, farm families that participate in Proto-Co-op, affecting 10 to 11,000 people.
So why did you start a second loan fund?
We saw that that CEPAD was actually not large enough to handle all the money that was coming in. Incredible interest in the United States to support this kind of development. And so we would get, without even doing much promotion, we would get a lot of requests in the mail, so how do we invest? And CEPAD was reaching its capacity level because we'd grown so quickly from 1992 to 1997, from $65,000 to $2.3 million in that amount of time. And so we saw that there were other organizations that had been started in Nicaragua that could handle this money too. And so that's where we said, well, let's not do it this way anymore. Let's try the NICA Fund as a way to distribute money throughout other parts of Nicaragua. Well, CEPAD does lend to all parts of Nicaragua, but to distribute to other organizations working effectively in Nicaragua and allow more people to invest, because we were having to turn away investors. Right. We've reached our limit, can't lend anymore at this point, and now we won't have to. That's the plan anyway. How many people have been to Nicaragua? I know that Mark has been. Has anybody else been?
Has
been. Well, we offer delegations twice a year to Nicaragua. One generally in February, and the auction will be having a trip to Nicaragua. And we spend a week, and our February delegation looks at borrowers of our loan fund. So we usually go up north to to Esteli or Matagalpa, that area, to visit borrowers in there, as well as looking some at Managua. We also have trips that go in June that look at our WCCN's other project, our Women's Empowerment Project. And so that delegation spends more of its time in Managua, usually gets out to the countryside as well, looking at how violence against women, how it affects women there, what women are doing to organize against violence in their lives. And I have materials here about our Women's Empowerment Project, if you'd like to pick those up too.
So if I want to go on one of those trips, what do I do?
We can contact WCCN. Our materials that we have here have our address, phone number, email, fax number on them. Our trips cost approximately $800. They cost $800 and then airfares on top of that. And we sometimes have scholarships available, particularly for the women's delegations. And we have not set the exact dates for either of our delegations in 1999. Our February delegation is projected to be February 6th through 13th. At this point, we have to confirm with some people in Nicaragua first to make sure that that will work. And our summer delegation is usually in June, first or second week of June. It's usually, people say it's often a life-changing experience. It's a new way of looking at things. We offer a lot of opportunities to interact with Nicaraguans, hear their stories directly from them.
Do you have to learn the language to be able to get along there?
No. We have interpreters that travel with us at all times. And usually they're, I'm not the interpreter, but I go on the delegations and I speak enough Spanish to help conversations, facilitate conversations between individuals if that comes up. A delegation to pay the fee that covers all in-country transportation, all translation, all meals, all lodging, cultural events that we participate in. So it's a good deal, and nobody has to speak Spanish. We have excellent translators that travel with us. Hope that some of you will join us. If you'd like to receive more information about WCCN or get on our mailing list, you can return the back of these. It says to send me more information about the loan fund, so we can get you on the mailing list that way. You can fill it out and turn it to me. I guess we've reached about the end of our time, so thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Do you want to talk to me later? I'll be happy to answer them. And tomorrow I'm giving a presentation at 6 as well.